I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. All right, everyone with a stroller, you go over there on the left. Please try to keep your children's bottles and toys and whoopies and diapers from littering the floor, and do try to keep the noise down. Now, all the rest of you, all you people with the lattes and the well-pressed pants and the small expensive cars not littered with Cheerios, you go over there on the right. The debate will start in just a minute. The issue this hour, should there be places where children are banned? Should there be days at the museum, sections of restaurants, who knows, maybe parks, malls, and theaters where those messy, loud, obnoxious little people are not welcome? Clean up on aisle 7. See, with birth rates on the decline, many say the time is right for such changes. But, and this is an enormous but, we have all been raised to view children, ours and everyone else's, as our future. So who are those selfish people who think that the mewling of a newborn child is something that ought to be banished like tobacco smoke? This hour we'll explore the child-free movement. We want to hear from you. Should children be seen and not heard? Or perhaps not even seen? Do the child-free adults, they are taxpayers and voters as well, do they have to put up with your kids' noise? Or should they stop being so narrow-minded and go wax their BMWs? Our number's 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we will hear from people who see both sides of this issue. In fact, we're going to start with a woman in Charlotte, North Carolina, who started that city's chapter of No Kidding. It's a group that argues for the rights of those without kids. Candy started that 3 years ago. She's joining us on the line now. Candy, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
How's the movement going?
It's going very well. Our chapter is growing exponentially. It's fabulous.
Now, tell me something, Candy. How can you be against kids? That's like being against kittens or puffy clouds or stuffed animals, isn't it?
Well, first of all, we're not against kids. We just don't have any. The child-free run the gamut from people who love kids, who volunteer their time with children, to people who just don't want to be around kids, just like they don't want to be around animals or other people or bad things in general.
It's part of your belief that the whole society, the whole system that we live in, Candy, is in many ways skewed towards families with children, adults with kids, or the kids themselves, right?
Yes, I believe the whole world is more child-friendly now than it has been in the past. I feel like there used to be places you could go, such as the opera or a bar, and, you know, there wouldn't be children there. Well, now you can't go anywhere in public without children being everywhere.
Now, Candy, you don't have any kids, right?
Right.
Did you decide long ago not to have kids?
Yes, I decided a long time ago.
When you were what, a teenager? Mm, or?
9 years old.
Nine?
Yes.
What happened when you were nine?
My little sister, when she was 3 years old, she was very active, I might say.
She was a serious pain, right?
Yes. And so even before I knew what being child-free was, I decided, well, if there's a way I can get out of this torture almost, that I would get out of it. And so that's the main reason why I'm child-free, because I know how hard it is to raise children. That's why I decided not to do it.
And your husband, how did you guys come to that decision? Was it a difficult one?
No. We met on a blind date, and that's one of the first questions I asked him, if he was interested in having children, and he said no. And it was a great first date, and we've been together ever since.
Now, I've seen a couple of copies of letters that you wrote to the Charlotte Observer where you're, you know, making the case for people who want to make sure that there's space for adults without children around. And I'm reading them and I'm thinking to myself, oh man, I bet Candy has had some nasty backlashes from people who say, how dare you speak against children?
Yes, I get backlashes, but it's really in the minority. I usually get, every time my letter is in the paper, I get a couple of calls at home saying, congratulations, we're glad you have the guts to say what we want to say, but can't. And so I feel like I'm speaking for a lot of people now.
And so if you try and zero in for those of us who are hearing your ideas for the first time, Candy, on what it is that you're looking for, is it that you want to get away from the noise? You want to be able to go to a museum without having some three-year-old burst into tears? Is that the nub of it here?
Well, it's not that we really want to exclude children. It's just that children in general today are so ill-behaved and not supervised like they were in the past. And if parents would in general watch their children more closely and keep them from running around the restaurant or the museum, we wouldn't have this problem.
So the idea that parents could, if they went back to a more Victorian time when children, in fact, were seen and not heard or better controlled or didn't eat with the adults or certainly didn't go to restaurants, really that would solve a lot of what you're talking about.
Well, most of it, but I do believe there are places where adults should be in a quiet environment by themselves, such as one of the more upscale restaurants or in a museum or places where there is a naturally quiet atmosphere.
And, Candy, what if someone says, oh, be careful what you wish for. You're going to die alone. You won't have a child there to hold your hand. If we take this to the nth degree, there's not going to be another generation. How do you answer people who look at it from that perspective?
Well, I don't think we'll have to worry about the population running out. There's over, last count, I think, 6 or 7 billion people on this planet with more people coming every second, so I don't have to worry about that. And as far as growing old and dying, every time we'll go to the nursing home to see my grandmother, I was the only one there. So where are the children taking care of their parents nowadays? They're not there. So I'll be in the nursing home with the rest of the parents, I suppose.
Now, for the parents who are at this very moment listening to you in their cars, they're driving somebody to a dance lesson or a school or something, what are you going to be doing on the weekend?
Well, I'll get my oil changed tomorrow, and I'll get my hair cut, and for the rest of the weekend, I'll spend it in a nice, neat, tidy, quiet house with my husband enjoying some downtime.
Candy, I want to thank you for being with us on the program.
You're welcome.
Candy Lake is founder of the Charlotte, North Carolina chapter of No Kidding, an organization for people without kids. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. In this hour, we are talking about the shift to A Life Without Children. Professor David Papineau is joining us now, and David is a sociology professor and co-director of the National Marriage Project at Rutgers University. He's actually joining us from a studio at Princeton University. David, nice of you to join us.
Nice to be with you.
The National Marriage Project that I mentioned there, that's not a family-friendly, family values type thing, is it?
It's a research group that's looking into marriage trends and marriage issues and thinking about the future.
Okay, so it's an academic thing, not an advocacy.
Absolutely.
Okay, just wanted to try and clear that up. Now, when Candy describes the society that she sort of imagines, and you look at the statistics that you pull in there, is she describing a world which we're all going to occupy whether we like it or not?
Well, maybe in the long run, but I think that it's important to point out that at least in the last few decades, in other words, currently, there hasn't really been a big increase in the number of people who are childless by choice. The big reason for the decline in the birth rate is that people are having fewer children. Of course, many have only one. And so I think that what probably we're talking about here is not a demographic trend as much as the fact that people who are childless by choice and in other ways are getting together in organizations like the one described and, of course, via the Internet and deciding that, well, to put it bluntly, that maybe they're some kind of new victim group or something and they need to speak out. And I certainly raise questions about the issue that we're becoming a more child-friendly society.
But when I look at the kind of numbers that you're pulling together, and I look back at how many kids were, how many households had children 50 and 100 years ago and compare that to today, that's a pretty startling comparison, isn't it?
Well, it's very, very important. That's probably what we should be focusing on. By the way, I have no objection to child-free spaces. We all need to get away from children from time to time. But the most interesting statistic that I've ever seen in this area is that in the middle of the 1800s, something like 80% of all households had children in them, so that adults, you know, were thinking about children all the time. Today, that figure is below 33% and projected to be about 28% in another 5 or 10 years. So that means most adults aren't living with children, and I'm going to argue that they're not thereby taking them as much into consideration as they once did, and our whole society really is becoming more anti-child.
So you're saying we're moving in that direction anyway, right?
We're moving in the direction of an anti-child culture, right?
Let's bring Madeline Cain in. Madeline is author of The Childless Revolution, a new book. She's joining us from KUSC in Los Angeles. Madeline, good of you to get up early in the morning and join us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
Tell me what led you to actually doing enough research on this that you'd pull together a book on it. Are you, like Candy, an advocate for more child-free living, or are you observing it?
Well, I'm certainly observing it, and while I'm not saying that everyone should live a child-free life, I think that what my research led me to see is that there are more and more women who are remaining childless and that they've been treated like second-class citizens. And I think that we need children
society,
in this world.
Treated by, like second-class citizens,
yes.
By society or by colleagues, by friends, by men? Be more specific.
I would say everything you mentioned, by colleagues, by family, by society. We talk about women being able to choose their roles, but the roles are still unfortunately defined as being eventually mothers, while the statistics are showing that more and more women are childless. And that's a topic we do not talk about. It's like the elephant in the living room. And we have suppositions about women who remain childless, and we view them in a negative light. I think we have not relaxed the role of a woman. We still tie femininity with fertility and say that a woman isn't a complete woman if she doesn't have children. And I am an advocate, absolutely, for saying that a woman has a right to choose the role that is right for her.
And are we, as a society, heading in that direction?
Oh, absolutely. The increase in the number of women who remain childless is growing by leaps and bounds. And I think that that's probably an evolutionary thing as women have become more educated, as we've gone into the work world, as we've delayed marriage, as we've had effective birth control. All these things have coalesced to create this new woman.
Connection listeners, are we moving to a time when there will be child-free zones in restaurants, child-free days at museums, places where adults who don't want the sound and the noise of children around them will be able to design their leisure time to, in fact, live that kind of life? What does that say about where we are in society? Is it recognizing a reality, or is it actually trying to change something? Is it a radically different way of looking at what we want the nation to be? 1-800-423-8255. I know you have opinions on this one. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. Dick Gordon, you're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. This hour, a conversation about whether or not there ought to be places in our lives where we can all escape the children, whether we have them or we don't. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Somerville, Massachusetts. Karen's on the line. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Karen. Hi.
How are you?
Good. I wanted to say that I am a mother, and I work with children. I'm a nursery school teacher. But I agree with Candy that there should be places where there are no children. I know that after working with children all day and coming home and feeding my children,
right,
often I'll want to go out to dinner with my husband. I'll pay a babysitter. Today, babysitters make between $9 and $14 an hour. And
don't
that's
for
like a high school kid or a college kid who'll tell you, I'm not going to clean up the dishes, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah. For $12, I'll watch your TV, put your kids to bed, right?
That's right. So I'll go out to a restaurant and think, finally, adult time, and there'll be children running up and down the aisles and screaming and carrying on. And I do think that the standard of behavior has changed over time. And when I was young, there was an expectation that if you were in public that you'd behave a certain way. But today, anything goes, and kids, they run and they yell, and parents don't control them. And because of that, I think it would be nice to have a place where I could go and spend alone time with my husband and be in an adult situation without kids.
Okay, now, Karen, you and I both know that if we walked over to that table in the restaurant and asked the mom and the dad there to try to, you know, control their kids, we likely get snapped at.
Yes, absolutely.
And so how do we get from where we are now to what you and Candy and Madeline are talking about?
You know, I don't know. You can go to more expensive restaurants. You think you can, but children are welcome everywhere. I think that's what the issue that Candy's raising. Like, can we have places that are child free? And I think that we should, because right now there is no solution.
Karen, thanks for your call.
Okay.
Good luck.
Bye.
Madeline, when we look at this overall, though, we're talking about something that's a bigger issue than restaurants and places to go where there aren't kids. Because I remember, 5-6 years ago, people were talking about this as a workplace issue, where
yes.
somebody would say, hey, you know, I got to get to the daycare. Can you finish this project? And I'm out of here, right?
Right, exactly. And I think that what we're talking about is finally affording childless women some kind of respect for the role that they do play in our society and not penalize them for it. There is an expectation in the workplace that if a mother gets a call that a child is sick, that she will just, you know, head out of the office, as well she should. I'm not saying that she shouldn't do that. Of course she should. But that the child-free employee is left to finish whatever project needed to be done. And I think that this is something that child-free employees are not allowed to talk about out loud, because then they look like they're against children and against families, and they look badly. And that's, I think, one of the things that's really important to understand is that all of the child-free women that I spoke to, almost to a person, liked children, but liking them did not translate into them wanting to have them and raise them.
Mm-hmm. David Papineau, is this something that that society needs to take a second look at, the way that parents get that extra bit of privilege, whether it's at the workplace or even in a restaurant?
Well, I just take exception to a lot of the things that have been said. I certainly have nothing against women making a choice, and certainly I think there ought to be child-free spaces, but it's really parents in our society that are the beleaguered group. I mean, my goodness, parenting used to be a collective enterprise, and you had lots of people around, and now it's a lonely enterprise. The culture seems to be progressively against parenting. It's invaded childhood in devious ways that we can all think of, and you know, my sympathies would lie much more with parents. I'm certainly sympathetic to the childless, but that's where I come from, and I think that children are the future of our society, and they're the responsibility of all of us. And I think we need to do much more for children, not less.
1-800-423-8255. Let's go next to Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Lance is with us. Lance, thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I think that the whole approach is wrong. I have three small children, twins that are 3 and a 7-year-old, and we just don't take them to certain places because it's our responsibility. And I think that's the problem. You don't need to enforce rules or regulations as to where parents go. It needs to be the responsibility of the parents to know that you don't take small children to an opera. If you take them to a restaurant, you make them behave. You have them sit down or you get up and leave. And it's, you know, here we go again, wanting to put more rules and regulations on people, and there needs to be the responsibility of the parent to understand and know when and where you take children.
But if it doesn't happen, Lance, if Karen tries to get that, you know, once a month night out with her husband, goes to a film, and there's a kid 2 rows back who's crying, and that's the reality, then is saying, okay, Wednesday nights are no kids in the theater, an answer or not?
I don't think it is. I think it just boils down to teaching people the responsibility of what it is to have children and to take them out of public. I agree. I own a restaurant, and I've had to walk up and tell people to make their children sit down or leave. And I have a late-night bar. I've asked people who have brought in babies at midnight. I said, I'm not going to serve you. Your child shouldn't be in here. So there has to be some responsibility on the people. And people have to learn right from wrong. You don't take children to certain places. And taking them to bars, to restaurants where they go nuts and run around is just not appropriate. And we need to emphasize that message rather than saying we're going to create rules and regulations.
Okay, Madeline, what about that? What about just teaching the grown-ups to
behave? There are rules and regulations. For example, if someone wants to live in a child-free apartment building, they can't do that unless you're 55 years of age or older. So that you may have a woman who is childless, and she may be childless tragically. She may not be able to have children. And she has a baby crying in the apartment next to her, and every time she hears that, that's painful to her. Or she might be on the other side of the woman with the baby is a woman who really does not want to be around children. These people do not have a choice. They are stuck with this. And I think that that's where the rules and regulations have tipped in favor of families and have been ignoring those who are child-free.
So, David Papineau, are we imagining an 11-year-old child holding up the First Amendment saying you can't make this a child-free building? I mean, the federal law, as I understand it, says you can only have child-free buildings rented to people who are 55 and older. Is that right?
Well, you know, I'd like to make one other point, and that is the point has been made here that there's this huge increase in childless couples. But the census of 2000 found that in the early 40s, 15% of women were childless. In 1960, guess what? It was 15% of women were childless. So there really hasn't been all this big increase. Most women do have a child and want to have a child.
Madeline, that's not what your research says.
No, that is not what my research, according to the Census Bureau, there's been an increase of over 200% between 1964 and 1976. We've had a huge increase. In 1998, the Census Bureau showed that 42% of all women were childless. It is a tremendous increase, and this you're seeing happen despite the fact that we have fertility treatments. Women are more and more remaining childless. Some are choosing it. It's happening by chance, and some it's by happenstance. It is not a clear-cut reason why all women are remaining childless. It is a very complex issue, and people do it for different reasons.
You can't look at the entire population of women because women are having children much later and they're having fewer children than they once did. You have to look at the chances that a woman is going to have at least one child before she dies, and that hasn't changed very much.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to have you in on this conversation to Somerville, Massachusetts now. George is with us. Hi, George. Thanks for calling.
Good morning. Great show. I'm really glad to finally hear this being aired. I'm a single man. I've, you know, worked all my life, and I have many a time said, listen, you've got a kid. Go on home. I'll finish up. And then I say to myself, why am I doing that? And also I have seen in the workplace men and women are given paid time off or part paid time off when they have children, which, you know, a great thing to do. But those of us who have to, who are not being paid extra, are taking up the slack. And I think, you know, the childless do not get thanked for that. And, you know, on the other side of the coin,
George, let me take you back to the first point that you raised, because that's the one that intrigues me the most, that sense that, yes, you will cover for a mom or a dad who has to go and pick up a child at daycare or deal with a sick child, because for a long, long time, we have either believed or been taught that it is society's collective responsibility to make that kind of space for those who are raising the children. Would you agree with that?
Oh, totally. And it's also, you know, you, how do you look at a friend and colleague in the eye and say, you know, I don't care that you have a kid. That's not my problem. Don't bring the kid to work, which a lot of people do nowadays. And I'm sure anybody who's worked in an office, as soon as a young baby walks in, work stops.
Right. So what's changed? How are we marking this change then?
What's changed, in my opinion, I mean, I'm going to be 40. My parents had me late. My mother brought me home on her 40th birthday in 64. back then, and I've asked my family about my parents about this. She said, back then we didn't go out to eat with kids. You know, if we did, we went to a family restaurant. But when your father and I wanted to go out to a nice restaurant, we left you with, usually with a grandmother, you know, or a babysitter, and we went to the nice restaurant. Nowadays, it's cheaper to eat out, and many families have more disposable income. I look at my two brothers who each have children, and again, don't get me wrong, Uncle George is their favorite, as so he should be, only because I let them do things that their parents don't.
I don't want.
But, you know, I've watched my brothers take their children to the expensive, expensive restaurants, and I'd like to think that they're better behaved than most, but I sat there cringing, thinking, if these weren't my my nieces and nephews,
right,
I would be the person at that other table who is, I can just see getting angry at the loud children. And, you know, I've seen it from both ends, but it is really a generational thing.
All right. George, thanks a lot for your call. I want to go back to Madeline here, because, Madeline, you have a daughter, right? You had a daughter late in life?
I do. I had one at 39 and a half.
And when the two of you talk about this notion of child-free spaces, does she ever look at you with her head on one side and going, what, so, Mom, you didn't like me or you don't like me or what?
No, I think that whether it's a child-free space or not, I think George, if I can just for a second go back to what George was talking about, George is voicing something that I think that we're uncomfortable hearing in our society, and that maybe we are treating parents as privileged individuals, especially in the workplace, and we have not allowed them to say, you know, I don't mind doing it on occasion, but you made a choice to have a child, and that's your decision, and that's fine, but why does it affect my life?
But aren't they, Madeline, mm-hmm. to a certain extent, and mm-hmm. privileged people? Aren't they the ones who are, you know, raising the next generation of firemen and policewomen and teachers? And you know what I mean? That's where we understand that privilege to exist.
Well, certainly, if that's the choice that you want to make, but I think what is fair in a work environment, if everyone's being paid for the work that they're doing, why am I doing more work because you made a choice?
David Papineau, let me hear from you on this one.
Well, it's interesting that on the one hand, we're saying that parents need to spend more time with their kids. And, of course, that's probably the big reason why we have so many brats out there, that parents aren't spending as much time as they once did with the children. But then comes the workplace, and we decide that maybe parents don't need to spend that time with kids. And my concern is that this whole tendency, just to give you another example, we're seeing across the country now school bonds being voted down in a way that they never have been in the past. And the idea is extended from what we've been talking about, that, look, you had these kids, you educate them, you pay for them. I don't have kids, I'm not going to pay for
right.
the schools. And that's the damaging kind of thing that we're talking about.
1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. Next to Durham, North Carolina, Michelle's with us. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what are you thinking?
I think that one of the big problems in this society today is that people are trying to insulate themselves more and more. They're participating less in society as a whole, and they're less willing to help people who aren't just like them. It's part of our societal responsibility to teach children how adults socialize appropriately, and it's also part of our collective responsibility to make concessions to parents who are working and also trying to raise the next generation of workers. If we relegate our kids to Chuck E. Cheese and places like that, we're going to raise a bunch of hooligans.
So you're saying that the kids do need the chance at age 8 to go to the opera and to behave there, not to be banned?
Oh, absolutely. My son is 4, and he has benefited greatly by attending functions at which he is one of the only children or the only child, and he's extremely well-behaved. In fact, he's convinced people who are on the fence about having kids that they want to take the plunge because they see that, you know, you can raise a child who can socialize well with adults.
Michelle, let me ask you, if you got into a sort of over-the-fence conversation with a neighbor who didn't have kids, and that neighbor said to you, fine, it's great, you know, do what you want, but you know what? I don't want to pay taxes so your child can go to school. That should be your responsibility. You made the choice to have children. You pay to educate them.
Well, you know, then you could also say, well, you know, that person doesn't have a job, so that we should just let that person starve. I mean, the problem is that since we're human beings, we need to help each other out. You know, if we all just pay attention to ourselves and our own needs, the society is just going to disintegrate.
Madeline,
let me just say that of all the women that I interviewed, and I did ask them specifically about paying taxes for schools, not one of them objected to doing it because they all did see that the next generation is important and do want to contribute to it. Most of the women that I interviewed, and that was interesting to me too, are women who work with children, are teachers or nurses. It's not that they don't like children. It's that there is a difference with liking them and choosing to raise them.
Okay, but David made the point earlier that there are people who don't want to pay extra tax money to build schools or improve schools to educate someone else's children if they've made the decision not to have children.
I've never heard anyone say that. There may be other reasons why they didn't vote for those bonds.
David?
Well, they're of course they're not going to tell you that. That would be totally politically incorrect. But
okay. That's
the underlying reason. Why else are they voting against schools?
And I have
Let's not get into that discussion. Maybe because they don't feel that the money's been spent properly to begin with.
What's fascinating about it is that as you talk about this, there are places that you can go, places where the conversation can be heard in a politically correct way, and places where this is really hard to talk about, would be hard for people to talk about amongst themselves. You, Madeline, I'm sure you found that.
I find that people are afraid to ask a woman, why are you childless? Because you're afraid you're going to either hurt her feelings or you're getting into it. And yet people at cocktail parties come up and say, how many kids do you have? And that's an okay conversation to have. But you can't discuss childlessness. It's the elephant in the living room.
1-800-423-8255. We'll take the elephant out of the living room for the balance of this program. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the idea that perhaps society ought to rearrange things a little bit for the benefit of people who don't have children, or deal a little more harshly with those who do, so the life is easier for the others. 1-800-423-TALK to join us. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio.
What do you need me to do?
It's about Miranda and the baby.
Babies are not my scene.
I don't think it would kill all of us to be a little more supportive.
No, all right. When he's in college, I'll take him for a drink and I'll flirt with his friends. How's that?
Maybe you could just stop by tomorrow and say, I hear you had a baby. How's that going?
Carrie, I have no time. I'm booked all day. I have my hair appointment and I'm returning a vibrator before that.
Hair and a vibrator.
Yes, that is my life, and I don't have to justify it. Oh, I hate it when people have babies and they suddenly expect you to turn into some kind of Norman Rockwell painting.
Two Sex and the City characters, Carrie and Samantha, talking about their friend Miranda, who's just had a baby, and illustrating a little bit of a humorous way what we're talking about on the program today. The Childless Revolution is a book by Madeline Kane. It talks about the drive by adults to try and find spaces and places and a little more equity in the workplace. Professor David Papineau is with us. He's a sociology professor and co-director of the National Marriage Project at Rutgers University. And our number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to hear from you. Next to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and Marjorie's on the phone. Hi, Marjorie.
Hi there. I've never called into the show like this before. And just listening to this conversation, I just felt I had to say something. I respect anybody who doesn't believe that they want to have a child. And I think there's, in fact, a lot of pressure on people to have children who maybe shouldn't have children.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't take away from the fact that children are a part of our reality. They're a part of our future. And I don't think people have the right to be in a child-free environment anywhere at any time. I don't have children myself, but children are our future, and it's as cliche as it sounds. We do need to invest in and nurture in them, and whether we have them or not, I think we do have a collective responsibility for raising them.
You know, but
that's how we create a more just world, a healthier world.
But the edge of the wedge is there, Marjorie. If you want to book yourself a Club Med vacation at a piece of a beach that has no kids, you can pay to do that. So really what we're talking about is saying, okay, should we have a Starbucks on our corner that doesn't allow kids? Or should we, you know, set aside Friday evenings at the museum for people who don't want the squeak of a stroller as they're looking at a painting? What's the big jump from one to the other?
I was just going to say that, you know, there are obviously times where I have been out and where I've heard babies crying and children running around, and I've just been exhausted and thought, oh, just go away. But the reality is that they are a part of our world, and I don't think that whatever the inconvenience or the harassment people feel is really that profound. I mean, it's about accepting responsibility for who we are in the world. Part of the social contract of being in this world is that we move through the world with others, and that includes children.
Okay, Madeline, talk to Marjorie here.
Well, I understand what Marjorie is talking about, but once again, we're going back to choice, and I want to point up another area where there is some inequality going on. I've spoken to some workers who also were upset because they've had bosses who've changed their insurance policies at work because employees that had children wanted to have their families covered. And one woman, you know, just came to me and she said, I've lost my dental coverage because they've changed the whole policy. And now I'm not going to get dental coverage. But
Madeline, let me interrupt you and bring you back, though, to the larger point that Marjorie was making. She's still on the line. And I want you to address what she's saying when she says, you know, we're humans. We're on the planet. We're expecting humans to be here after we leave. And part of what we have to, you know, endure or live with or embrace, however you want to look at it, is the sound and the presence of children in our lives.
Well, I think we all recognize that. I haven't had a childless woman saying that that's something that they don't want, that they don't want a complete child-free environment in which to live.
Right.
I think that we're talking about just having some sensitivity to those that are childless. And maybe, what if there was an afternoon that was a child-free afternoon at a museum? Why would that be so terrible?
Marjorie?
I think there have been plenty of afternoons that I've been able to go to the museum, and I'm not surrounded by children. I guess I just don't think the problem is so, or the issue is so overwhelming that, in fact, you know, I don't walk through this world bombarded by children. And I just, you know, I'm always amazed and in awe when I go to Europe and I find other European countries that are so much more child-centered. A child walks into the room and people just light up. And then I come here, and I, in fact, think that we do just the opposite around children. We see them as objects or nuisances to figure out how to ignore or to make invisible. And so I actually would disagree with Marilyn and say that, I absolutely respect and want to value people's rights to have not have children and encourage that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people should have children if they don't want to. I also think that if you're childless, that doesn't mean that, in fact, you're childless. Children are all of our responsibilities, and they're not objects to be removed.
A few years ago, I lived in Russia, and we saw firsthand at that time, because our daughters were quite small, how Russians view children. You'd be walking down the street and in the wintertime, and a complete stranger would come up, grab your child by the shoulders, and tighten up the mittens on her hand and do up the strap under her chin, and then look you in the eye and bark at you for, you know, taking your responsibilities as a parent badly. And this kind of set us back a bit on our heels. But the good side of it was that you never waited in a line if you had children. The men, the women, the stereotypical surly Russian would stand aside so the children could go to the front. And David, I want to bring you in on this because I'm curious to know how we place where we are in America right now in context of what's happening elsewhere in the world. I mean, we know that the birth rate's going down in Europe, perhaps even faster than it is here in this country. But the conversation that we're having about finding places and spaces without children, is that something unique to America?
Yeah, it really is. And one interesting thing that's come out of this conversation is there's so much focus on the fact that children are ill-behaved. You know, if they were really nice in the opera and so on, they're No problem. But so maybe that's what we really should be talking about. Why are there so many ill-behaved children today?
Well, isn't that part of the circle where in order to raise children today, way more than in years past, you need both parents working? And so, you know, instead of the child spending enough time with one or the other parent, they're in daycare, and it's a little harder for parents to control their children. I mean, Madeline, is that part of it?
I think it is part of it. I think that we now have expectations that women are going to work. To be a stay-at-home mother is considered not the thing that people should be doing. We're saying that, you know, that both members of the marriage have to work in order to raise a family. And yet, you know, when I said that to my mother years ago, she said, but we didn't expect to have a house and two cars when we were 30 either. We were willing to live on less in order for me to be home. So the whole societal view of what our expectations are has changed. And I think, you know, it is harder without mothers home with children. And I think that the children are more ill-behaved. You know, it's interesting you talk about your trip to Russia and the people coming up and being hands-on with your children to try to help them. If you dare to go up to a parent and do that, you know, to a child in this society, people will bark at you. We are missing that collective thing of somebody down the block saying, you better behave or I'm going to tell your mother. We don't do that anymore. We are too isolated, you know, one-on-one, deciding how to live our lives. And it is unfortunate. I wish we were more fluid and more of a village, but we aren't.
Let me go back to our callers, to Fayetteville, North Carolina. Melanie's with us. Hi, Melanie.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well.
What are you thinking?
I wanted to call. I am a stay-at-home mom. I've got two little girls, and I was calling basically. I wanted to respond to the man in Chapel Hill who owns the restaurant.
Oh, that's Lance. Yeah, go ahead.
Lance, he was saying that he thinks it's totally the parent's responsibility to know where and where not to take a child. And while I think that's true, and that's I think it's kind of idealistic, because in today's society, I think most of the time, parents, like you're talking about right now, they both have to work. Nobody gets to spend as much time with their children, and I think they have a right to bring them everywhere, because they have to make up for that time apart.
Well, what are your rules, Melanie? What do you live by?
We live by, we go out to a restaurant. I mean, living on one income, we don't get to go out much anyway. But we go to a restaurant maybe once or twice a month without our children. They don't go anywhere with us. I mean, I've got a 17-month-old and a 1-month-old. I don't expect them to behave. So, you know, we get a sitter. And we have friends who are also stay-at-home moms, and we collaborate, and we have play groups, and we take them there and go off somewhere by ourselves. I think there should be rules and restrictions. I don't want to go to a museum and have a little kid crying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I want to have that time apart from my children.
I thank you for your call, Melanie. Our
thank
number's 1-800-423-8255. You're listening to The Connection from NPR. David Papineau, earlier in the program, you were bridling against the idea of introducing, you know, any kind of new rules or restrictions. Is anybody persuading you here?
Oh, I've always been. I'm not opposed to rules and child-free spaces.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, you know, and especially in view of the fact that there's so many kids are ill-behaved. And, you know, you certainly have child-free spaces in Europe, too. But I do think America has gotten a little bit extreme in the kind of the sense of people who don't have children now is kind of a victim class, and we really need to look more at how we're raising these kids and why we have so many ill-mannered offspring.
You're a father, right? And a grandfather, too, right?
I am, yeah, 4 grandchildren.
And will you take them out, you know, to a place and sit there and be uncomfortable if they're unruly?
Well, I have 2 grandchildren who live in Sweden, and they're living in child paradise, which we could talk about. And the others are living in a college town where the parents don't have television, and they try to lead a kind of insulated life to protect their kids. And so that's about where we're at.
So why is it? I'm going to ask you, and then I'm going to ask Madeline the same question. Why is it that we do, if, as you say earlier, we do have such different attitudes about children in this country?
Well, we've become a very diverse society, and we have different attitudes on the part of different ethnic groups and so on. And then we do have now this growth of people who don't have children or who are in a stage of life where they don't have children, who are beginning to look around and think that maybe society is acting against them. I don't happen to believe that, but anyway, that's what this show is about.
Madeline? What's happening in this country seems to be unique to this country.
I don't think it's unique to this country. I think the childlessness is growing all over the world. We're seeing it in Canada. Italy is not reproducing itself. We've seen, except for underdeveloped countries, the birth population is decreasing. I think that this is an evolutionary process. I think childlessness is an evolutionary process, and I think that it might actually be a very positive one. It should mean that we will develop into a society in which those who want children will have them and those who don't won't.
And will those people live apart?
Oh, I don't want them to necessarily live apart. I don't think that that's what we're asking. I think we're just asking for some sensitivity mm-hmm. to other people's needs, a group that has been overlooked.
And is that a reasonable request, David?
I would put the burden on the fact that our society is moving away from the needs and desires of children in so many respects. Parents are a beleaguered lot. Increasingly, they're assaulted by the culture. And that, in my view, is what we really should be focusing on. And, of course, I agree with the old cliche that children are our future and they're a collective responsibility, and we have to do the best by them. It's really what we're here on life to do in many ways.
An example, just a quick one, though, because we're short on time here, David, an example of what you mean about your notion that we're moving away from a society that looks after its children anyway.
We used to have a pretty sharp boundary between childhood and adulthood, and childhood was a time of innocence, not too many responsibilities. You could grow at your own pace. Today, you're thrust into an adult world at a very early age, with the sex and violence you can't get away from, for example, and children are growing up much too fast. And, of course, this is a part of what we've been talking about, that there are so many ill-behaved kids.
Lots to think about. Dr. David Papineau, thanks for being with us on the program today.
Thanks.
David's a professor of sociology, co-director of the National Marriage Project at Rutgers University. Madeline Kane, thanks a lot for being with us.
It was my pleasure.
Madeline is author of a book called The Childless Revolution. Earlier in the program, we talked with Candy Lake, who's founder of the No Kidding chapter in Charlotte, North Carolina. Our program's produced by Catherine Fenollosa, Sarah Field, Steph Katsonis, Kelly Jones, Jen Mattson, Nancy Cohen, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Our interns are Jennifer Giles and Matt Miller, who leaves us today, and best wishes to him. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.